Brothers and sisters, today we celebrate the solemnity of the Most Holy Trinity. Many priests consider this to be one of the most difficult days of the year to preach because the Holy Trinity is full of abstract concepts, concepts such as persons, processions, coherence, circumcision, and perichoresis, all technical terms that I'm sure everyone was contemplating when they woke up this morning. Despite the fact that we have these impressive-sounding terms to describe the Holy Trinity remains a mystery. That is to say, our human understanding will never fully comprehend God. This is why we use incense at Mass today. Incense symbolizes our prayers rising up to God, certainly. But incense also obfuscates our vision, makes it difficult for us to see clearly, making it a great way of expressing the fact that no matter what we see or know about God, we never have a clear comprehension of the fullness of God. St. Augustine famously said, "Si comprehendis, non est Deus." If you understand, it isn't God. The abbot St. Columban may have summed it up best when speaking about the nature of God. He said that God's nature is beyond words or understanding. Who then is God? He is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, one God. Do not look for further answers concerning God. Now, this isn't to say that we know nothing of God, for God has revealed himself to us as being a triune God. He's revealed that he is the perfection of love. The notion that God is love is so important that Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI's first encyclical letter was entitled Deus Caritas Est, God is love. The British author and theologian G.K. Chesterton asserted that if it is true that God is love, then the very nature of God must be a delicate interplay of the lover, the beloved, and love. And that's precisely what we see in the triune God. God is love, the interplay between the lover, the Father, the beloved, the Son, and love, the Holy Spirit. The Trinity, simply stated, is a fancy way of saying that God is love. Notice that we say God is love. We don't say that God has love or that God possesses love, but that he is love. His very being is structured according to love. This means that God should be thought of not as the supreme individual, but as a supreme relationship. God's very being is structured according to love, and that has profound implications upon us. The book of Genesis, if you'll recall, informs us that we are made in the image and likeness of God. We are modeled after God, who is love. We are created for relationship, and not just any relationship, but relationships whereby we live for the sake of an other. The Christian concept of self-giving love stands in sharp contrast to the American culture. Our secular culture tells us to assert ourselves so that we can achieve what we want. Think for a moment about graduations, which I know are rapidly approaching for many people. If you attend a graduation ceremony, you'll likely hear a speaker talk about finding yourself, or going out into the world and achieving your dreams, or leaving your mark upon the world. This goes against the notion of the Trinity. The Trinity doesn't teach us to assert ourselves as our secular culture so often does, but rather it tells us to lose ourselves in love. You see, asserting ourselves is what leads to sin. Recall what happened in the story of original sin. The serpent tricked Eve into asserting herself, right? She told him, "God said we'll die if we eat this fruit." And what did the serpent say? "No, you won't die. You'll become like God." And the implication is that God is holding you back. If you want to achieve your potential, you need to grasp at it for yourself. You need to assert yourself. Now, ironically, by doing so, Adam and Eve became as ungodlike as possible. For the Trinity is a pattern of unselfish love, living in perfect relationship with the other. Adam and Eve were pulled out of relationship with each other through their sin. Far from living for each other, they became pitted against one another as rivals. When God asked Adam, "What have you done?" What did Adam do? He didn't act out of love or concern for the other. No, he blamed the woman, pitting her against him. And not only that, he also blamed God for creating her in the first place, referring to her as the woman that you put here. When God went to Eve and asked why she did this, what did she do? She blamed nature. "The serpent made me do it." See, friends, this is what happens when we assert our individual selves. Far from living in harmony with everyone, we become rivals, sworn enemies of each other. The doctrine of the Trinity doesn't call us to assert ourselves. Rather, in an ironic fashion, it calls us to find our truest selves by losing ourselves in relationship with others. It beckons us to participate in love. Furthermore, the doctrine of the Trinity helps us to understand what love is and what love is not. Love is not fulfilling my individual desires, my individual wants and needs. It's about living my life for another. This living for another is what we, who are made in God's image and likeness, are called to do. The primary place where we can live out this Trinitarian love is, of course, in the family. In marriage, husbands and wives pledge to orient their lives for the good of the other. They're called to live for each other, being mutually self-giving to each other. And if couples don't understand this self-giving love on their wedding day, they quite certainly learn it upon the birth of children. When I meet first-time parents, quite frequently I'm told by them how their whole concept and their whole perspective on what it means to love has changed as a result of having a child. They know that they can no longer live for themselves. Rather, their lives become about serving their children. You know, this really hits me when I go to Texas, where I've got two godchildren, both of whom are twins. They're both from two different cousins, but they're both twins. If you ever want to see what it means to live for others, talk to parents of twins. When parents have twins, it's impossible for them to live for themselves. The twins just don't allow that to happen. If one of them doesn't need something, the other one certainly does. Parents, and especially parents of twins, are constantly making sacrifices, giving up their own desires in order to live for their children. God does the same thing, only to perfection. The Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit perfect living for the other. The Holy Trinity is the perfection of love. As Christians, we're called to model our lives after the Holy Trinity, in whose image and likeness we are made. This means not seeking to find and assert our individual self, but to lose ourselves in love and in service of one another. In doing so, we realize our greatest potential, the potential of living as we were truly created, living in the image and likeness of our triune God. Brothers and sisters, peace to you and to all who revel in the love of the Trinity.